Well, good evening and welcome to the third presentation, and this is our eighth series of talks on Kentucky Live, Southern Culture at its Best, sponsored by the Friends of WKU Libraries and the Kentucky Museum. My name is Brian Coots, and as head of the Department of Library Public Services, I coordinate this series with my colleague back in the blue, Peggy Wright, with assistance from our website guru, Haiwan Wong, just back from China taking pictures, and our reference coordinator back in the right, Brian Carson. Daniel Peach designed the posters, and Kath Penyavaria, our Glasgow campus librarian, arranged the reception. Our speaker tonight is a native of Mount Hermon, Kentucky, with deep roots in Barron County. Her ancestors first settled in the Beaver Creek area in the 1790s, and her interest in local and family history is a legacy from her father. Together, they spend many happy hours exploring their home county, learning about the state's history and their own family roots. Nancy is a graduate of Western Kentucky University, where she received her BA and MA with an emphasis on the history of the South. And after a number of years as senior reference associate with the Department of Library Public Services, she completed an MA in Information Science at the University of Kentucky and assumed a new role as reference and image librarian for the Kentucky Library and Museum. And it was here that she gained access to the rich photographic image collection that forms the backdrop for tonight's talk. She supplemented those photos with others from civic organizations and private individuals. Nancy is a board member of the Janice Hope Giles Historical Society, where she acts as a docent at the author's home, which is now a museum near Columbia, Kentucky. She also works as the registrar for the Samuel Davies chapter of the Daughters of the American Revolution, and she gives frequent workshops on Kentucky genealogy. It's been said that we do not remember days, but moments from our past. So here to talk about some of those moments from the history of a county once called the best place to live in rural America, please welcome Nancy Richards.
I always open every presentation that I give with a warning and a blessing. My warning to you is that I come from a long line of magnificent, wonderful, long-winded speakers. Lots of Baptist ministers thrown in there. So that's my warning to you. But my blessing to you is that I am none of those. And so I will promise you brevity. But it's a wonderful, interesting topic for me. And so I just want to talk to you a little bit about some of the things that I learned and, of course, some of my favorite images. This book, published by Arcadia, is one of the largest publishers in the United States for state and local history. And I hope that Barron County can now add this honor to the many that they've had. Of course, in 2007, the county was named one of the best places to live in rural America. And then recently, one of the best places for children to reach their educational goals. And so I hope that this will be one of those honors in having the book published by Arcadia. So I want to talk to you a little bit about, as I said, some of the things that I've learned, some of the interesting images. And then I will talk to you a little bit about some of the famous people, too. Many of you may already know that the county has produced one of the South's first African-American mayors, Lescott Twyman, two governors, Preston H. Leslie and Louis Nunn, renowned musicians Billy Vaughn and Cynthia May Carver, a three-time Pulitzer Prize winner, Arthur Kropp, two Congressional Medal of Honor recipients, Richard Bush and William Day, a major television network president, Julian Goodman, and a United States Air Force General, Russell Dorey. For some background, I want to read you a little bit about the introduction that I wrote for the book. Barron County in its formation was taken from parts of Greene and Warren counties and became the 37th county in Kentucky. In turn, its original 1,500 square miles have been taken to create the surrounding counties of Allen, Hart, Metcalf, and Monroe. Today, though a cohesive community has many parts, as represented by the small towns that make up the whole. Communities such as Kay City, Park City, Austin Tracy, Etoile, 88, Heisel, and Temple Hill remain vibrant today because of their cultural traditions. The county and its residents also help preserve their sense of place and love of the land. The natural features of the landscape have made agriculture the primary industry for the county, though manufacturing, retail, and medicine are fast encroaching as economic diversification continues. Tobacco production is dwindling in the county, but Barron County still ranks at the top of beef and dairy cattle production in the state. The love of history and heritage is evident in the county, as Barron holds strongly to its history, rural roots, and family ties. Many of the first settlers were Revolutionary War soldiers who received military service land grants. The county retains much of the verdant beauty that was noted by early travelers. One coming in 1840 after an excursion throughout the entire region noted, "None but a recreant to nature and undeserving of its pleasures could remain indifferent to the charms in such lavish profusion around." The traveler further commented on the healthiness of the climate, the fine range for cattle, the facilities for raising swine, the culture of tobacco, and the growth and preservation of timber, as reason enough to totally disagree with the appellation of the Barrens. Census and other records show more settlers of Scottish ancestry coming by way of Virginia established Barron County. Thus, the county retains and celebrates its cultural heritage through its popular Highland games. The games, complete with bagpipes, kilts, and competitive athletic events, have become so popular that the Kentucky Tourism Council recently named the event as one of the top 10 festival events of the summer. The county seat also bears the name of Glasgow, though there is still disagreement if the designation comes from Glasgow, Scotland, or Glasgow, Virginia. An early visitor to the county seat remarked at the beauty and the cleanliness of the town of Glasgow and its environs, as well as noting there are more beautiful, accomplished, and intelligent women in Glasgow than in any other town of size in Kentucky. Quite a compliment. So now let me show you some of the other interesting things that I think that I discovered. It's like Dorothy, you know, in the Wizard of Oz, you never know what's in your own backyard. But let's start with some Glasgow images. Some of the captions for the photographs and the chapter titles for the books were harder to come up with than others, but this one was easy. For Glasgow is the heart of the Barrens, and the courthouse, of course, is the heart of the square. However, it was surprising for me to learn that this is the fifth courthouse. It's actually now the sixth courthouse, but this photograph, of course, is a picture of the fifth courthouse decorated for Christmas. It was built, this one, in 1896 under the administration of longtime judge G.M. Bohannon. In 1962, the citizens voted to build a new sixth courthouse, as this structure was considered unsafe, and so it was dismantled in 1964. It was replaced by the current Georgian-style courthouse in 1965. Just as that fifth courthouse has disappeared, so has this scene. This is the Glasgow Square in the 1940s, as it was a shopping hub for the surrounding towns. People came on a busy Saturday. They came from Tompkinsville, Mumfordville, Kay City, Horse Cave, and Edmonton to enjoy the food and the fun and excitement that always seemed to be downtown. It is a site now almost completely unfamiliar to anyone, particularly younger people, as the malls and the larger stores have drawn people away from the town squares and markets. This also shows the Glasgow Square with the ever-familiar, iconic George J. Ellis drugstore. Here's another site that has disappeared from downtown. This was Newberry's Lunch Counter, and it was one of the most popular spots in town to have a quick but tasty meal. Many still fondly remember the Mexican hamburgers and coleslaw. The store had two levels and the stairs were well traveled by myself among others, for the toy department was in the basement. And so it was a special treat not only to go downstairs but to eat at that counter. Somehow eating one of those hamburgers on one of those stools made it taste so much better. I was surprised at the places that I had to go. We get some of the photographs. I went as far, of course, in looking and asking at Princeton, Filson Club, the University of Louisville, and several other places. And this photograph is from the University of Louisville. It's a rock photograph. It is another Glasgow icon, the Glasgow Baptist Church. It's Glasgow's second oldest church, organized in 1818. Richard Garnett donated a lot for this church site on the corner of South Green and College Streets. After the first building was torn down, this two-story building with its pointed turret and arched windows was erected. The building remained until 1894 when it was torn down and a new building constructed. As I said, this church is now the largest church in Glasgow. Also seen in the photograph is Liberty Female College, which was founded in 1875. The school became co-educational in 1895 and proudly claimed graduates who became faculty members at Harvard, John Hopkins, the Boston Conservatory of Music, and the Royal Academy of Music in London, among others. The college, at the top of its own hill, sold to the Glasgow Board of Education in 1912 and used jointly as an elementary and high school building until it was replaced by a new high school building in 1931. Some of the captions were fun to do. I'm going to show you some of the county's notables, but Barron County, of course, has produced its own share of celebrities, but we have been visited by some as well. Our own Jimmy Lowe made this image of a young Dolly Parton and her singing partner, Porter Wagner, trying to enjoy a meal at Montgomery's restaurant on Glasgow Square. But they're interrupted by this young autograph seeker or budding reporter. But Dolly seems to be doing fine with that country man. This was one of the most interesting Barron County natives that I learned about. I don't think that she's very well known, and I hope to continue to do some more research about her. Willa Brown Chapel. She was born in Glasgow in 1906, and her life produced many firsts. She was the first African-American woman in the United States to hold a commercial pilot's license, first woman in the United States to have a mechanic's license. She was the first black officer in the Civil Air Patrol, and she was the first black woman to run for Congress in 1946. Before World War II, Brown trained over 200 pilots, some who became part of the famous Tuskegee Airmen. The same year that she received her pilot's license, she received a master's degree from Northwestern University, and she taught for many years in Chicago public schools. Unfortunately, it was difficult for me to find early photographic records of the many other distinguished African Americans who called the county home. But a preliminary listing would include Theodore Terrible Ted Page. He was a Negro National League baseball player, civil rights activist S.E. Smith and William S. Dodson, National Association of Colored Teachers in Colored Schools President Francis M. Wood, Greenberry and Charlotte Chambers, pioneer settlers of many Minnesota townships, and John Walden, one of the first African Americans to seek public office in the county. Another pioneer source for the county is Linda Bewley Mayberry. And so writing the caption for this photograph was easy. Linda Bewley Mayberry was the first female police officer in Barron County and one of the first female state troopers in Kentucky. So she did open doors and lead the way for other women in law enforcement and in many other areas. She was a career police officer and retired after having served as deputy commissioner of the Kentucky State Police, directing operations for all divisions. Of course, here comes, if you've been around me very long, You'll hear me talk about Cousin Annie. So this is another favorite research topic of mine. I don't know that I can quite claim she is my Cousin Annie, but she lived next door to my grandma. Another Barron County pioneer was Cynthia May Carver, who performed as Cousin Emmy. She was born in the Austin area and is described as music historians as one of the most perfect singers of mountain ballads. She had a sassy demeanor and an outlandish personality, as you can imagine. And she loved to say of herself that she was the first hillbilly to own a Cadillac. But it is her music that stands out, particularly in contrast to the majority of Appalachian balladeers at that time. They would usually embrace a very serious, brooding nature along with those songs. Early on, Cousin Emmy made a living doing personal appearances and would typically be on the road every day, sometimes over 500 miles, to fulfill both stage and radio commitments at a time when women simply did not do this. Showmanship was always important to Cousin Emmy, for she was an extremely rare commodity. She had the ability to be both flamboyant and colorful, and yet remain down home and sincere. Both of these were key elements to her popularity, her rediscovery in the 60s, and her continuing longevity. She also appeared in a few movies, and I want to show you a little bit of her performance, if it works. Gary, you may want to come up and help.
Thank you.
Marion County notable was Henry Clay Morrison. He was recently named as one of the top 25 preachers of the 20th century. It was said of him that he was given by God a heart to move the multitude, a mind to think God's thoughts, and a voice to rouse his century, his church, and his country. William Jennings Bryan called him the greatest pulpit orator on the American continent. The camp meeting became one of his chief instruments, and the one that he built on Morrison Park Hill still remains today on Highway 63, still listed as one of the oldest camp meeting sites in the country, but sadly it is in a state of disrepair. Morrison was also an educator, Asbury College president, an editor and author in his own right. In his autobiography, he writes about growing up in the county and particularly remembers a time when Yankee soldiers would come into Glasgow as thick as pigeons. One of his biographers also noted, "For 3 days and nights, the road in front of the Morrison home was so jammed with infantry, cavalry, and baggage trains that it was nearly impossible to get across the road to milk the cows in the nearby pasture. The cows, however, did not suffer from want of milking. It was very kind of the soldiers to see that their udders were not spoiled from neglect of milking. While Glasgow never became a real battle area, the people suffered some of those privations in food and clothing which are common to any war. Coffee, for example, became so scarce that people cut raw sweet potatoes into long strips, dried and parched them, and ground them and used them into making what was called coffee. Since no sugar was available, long sweetening was used. This was sorghum molasses poured into sweet potato coffee. Because clothing became so scarce and expensive, most of the boys, Morrison's age, went barefoot during the summer and wore only one garment. It consisted of a long, white robe made of unbleached domestic with a big collar, long sleeves, and a skirt that reached halfway below the knees. It was split that way on the sides so as to give their limbs good room for exercise in case a hasty retreat became necessary." These are some of the most asked about photographs also. And of course, these particular images should have been familiar to me, growing up in church all my life. But I don't know, I guess a missed time period, of course, when this would have happened. In farm ponds and mill ponds. There's a Bible passage from Acts where Philip the evangelist is questioned by a new believer as he comes upon a body of water. "See, here is water. What prevents me from being baptized?" And so you can see that that was taken literally. The mill pond, the farm pond, the flowing river. I think there's an image here that we did of a baptism in a river. And many here may have been baptized in a river or a creek. So those are quite interesting. This, though, is the image that everyone asks about, wants to know more about. And the wonderful lady who allowed me to use the image is here tonight. This is an image of Clarence Carver in death. His sister, Mertie Berry, is posed beside him. He died in January 1908 after an ice skating accident on a farm pond. In contrast to society today, where grief is a very private matter, and there are over 60 euphemisms for death, such as passed away, expired, departed, gone to heaven, 19th and 20th century Americans mourned well. And this is an image that wasn't in the book, but it is, of course, Clarence, the same funeral. And people are fascinated, of course, by the poses. There was nothing unusual about these type of photographs in that time period. People today still do that. But what changes about this is that the focus shifts from Clarence, and you don't really think about him. You think about those melodramatic poses and swoons of the sisters. But as I said, these type of images were very common because that may have been the only image that a grieving family would ever have. People ask about Clarence's clothes. That would have been a very high sign of respect, the burial clothes, the burial shroud that he is in. And so there's lots of interesting history behind the photograph. Another, I couldn't find an image for Barron County of this, but my own great-grandfather is said to have built a small shelter over his beloved wife's gravesite so that he could visit every day, rain or shine. We went back a few years ago, took a metal detector, and actually found the nails that were still there left from it. Perhaps it was something like this, but on a smaller scale. So historians deem the period of Clarence's death and what my grandfather was doing, they call it the cult of memory. But it seems, and it does seem to us that some of the mourning customs of that day did go to extremes. But really, they were just like us. Sometimes it's just hard to say goodbye. Some more personal favorites of mine brought back lots of memories of looking for that bookmobile. Always an exciting time to see the bookmobile coming or the peddler coming. I couldn't make up my mind which I liked the best, but usually the peddler with the candy won out. It was noted with pride that one of the African American students at the high school on the right was such a voracious reader that she could read 85 books. She did read 85 books during 1 6-month period. The bookmobile librarian could hardly keep up with her. And all states still offer this traveling branch library service, but Kentucky holds the highest honor in it in that they have the most at 98 bookmobiles. In honor of our location tonight, I chose this image. This photograph shows some of the first Western Normal School Barron County graduates in 1913. The Glasgow Normal School started in 1876, but the school moved to Bowling Green and became known as Southern Normal School. Southern Normal eventually moved up the hill, eventually, of course, becoming Western Kentucky University. Today, coming full circle, WKU has this extended campus location in Glasgow. Two of the things that have greatly affected Barron County's history was the loss of the school for financial reasons, Southern Normal moved to Bowling Green, and also the loss of the railroad, a direct mainline railroad. So those were two things that have changed Barron County's history. I have been asked why I wanted to do a book on Barron County, because putting together a book proposal and getting it accepted is an arduous process. It was multi-level. I certainly wanted to bring recognition to my home county, and since my educational background is in history, the research process came naturally to me. Also, publications such as these photographical essays reach people in ways that other types of historical writing cannot. Kentucky State historian Thomas Park wrote that historians have an obligation to do more than dig up corpses, expose them to other historians, and then bury them again. He thought history should have some fundamental meaning, some outreach, not only to the profession itself, but to society in general. And these type of books do that. And on a personal level, my father, who is shown here, was a teacher in one-room schools in Monroe and Barron County for over 40 years. He was a grand storyteller. He loved local history, he loved the county, and he shared that love with me. And we've all heard the saying that you can't go home again, and you can't. But through the collecting and research process for this book, I was able to, in a small way, go home. And this seems to be a universal feeling, as evidenced by the letter written by Barron County native Arthur Kropp. And before I go on, I know that my Gary will say, tell them that is you in his arms. So that's me. And I'm just apparently exposing myself. Kropp, shown here in Washington office, grew up in the home that is still standing on Main Street with his grandparents, Emmanuel and Henrietta Morris. He was called the Dean of Washington Newsman as a writer from the New York Times. Over his 60-year career, Arthur Kropp knew 11 presidents and won 3 Pulitzer Prizes. He wrote to a Glasgow admirer in 1930. Someday, and I keep on saying it, I always keep on saying it. I'm coming back to Glasgow to look around. I know that South Fork Creek, which used to seem as wide as the Mississippi to me, will prove to be but a narrow stream. That the house on Riddle Hill, where I spent so many happy hours, will not be the large, imposing mansion which I thought it was at the time. But it will be pleasant, even though the dimensions have shrunk, to walk the streets and hilly turf again. I wonder if the cannon I obtained from the War Department as a memorial to my mother is still on the courthouse lawn. So in closing, as I promised you, brevity, I definitely did not inherit my father's longevity in speech. What I hope that people take from the book, other than the enjoyment of the photographs, is that they will look at the photographs that they have, that they will realize the value of them as historical records. As we all know, written records, there are going to be very few for us to study. People email each other, they don't write letters anymore. So historians are going to be in trouble in the future. But I do hope that you look at your images as historical records, you'll carefully preserve them, you'll record the memories that are prompted by them, and then share those images and recollections with others, as my father did for me. That's it.
I think we have time for questions.
Well, I'll start off. You mentioned you were able to get some of the photographs in the Kentucky Museum. Where else did you collect them, and well, who?
For instance, Arthur Kropp, he gave all his papers, of course, and that image of him came from Princeton.
Princeton.
And so that's where a lot of Kentucky Building had one image of him younger, but most of his papers and his images are at Princeton.
Princeton. Other questions?
I was just wondering for future research, since you mentioned both Willard Brown Chapel and Cousin Emmy, if you and with Ms. Chapel, you mentioned that she taught in Chicago schools, maybe Northwestern.
Yes.
Her alma mater,
yes.
Might have some things.
I hope
things.
So. I hope to continue looking at that. But I'm sure I found her obituary, of course, and there were several mentions of her and what she did, so I hope to pursue that.
Cousin Emmy. Where did you find that wonderful video?
Well, now, those we have bagged and scratched and found. The Swing in the Saddle, which you all saw a clip of. There's also the Second Greatest Sex. And then I'm trying to get she was on the Jack Benny Show, so only three appearances. I hope to get those, but I think that one came from...
Somewhere in Atlanta, didn't it?
Yeah.
Atlanta.
Yeah.
Not available.
No.
That's a real find.
Yeah, it was. She's very neat.
Yeah.
Other questions? You mentioned one of the problems when doing these kind of books is that an absence of photos of African Americans. Is that they don't exist, or?
Well, it's creating those relationships.
Yes.
But I was happy to find several that I did include in the book, and that was very important to me. And if there's ever a volume two, I hope to continue that.
How did you attempt to approach the whole structure? Did you start with old newspapers, and so you find out what happened behind?
Newspapers were very helpful, of course. And then there was, the book that was done by Woody Gardner and Francisco Good in the 70s or 80s. Then the other, the Warren books, just the similar ones that have been written about Green County, I use a lot of those. But newspapers were very helpful. And then just talking to people.
Did you find one of the problems with, we have lots of photograph collections, but the people are not always identified in the...
That's
recreating who's who.
Yeah, who's who. And the photographs lose value if I don't know who they are. You can study them for the costumes or the hairstyles, but still adding knowing who they are, you can recreate a history behind them.
Any more questions?
Approximately how long did it take you to do this?
A year and a half.
from beginning to end.
Sometimes it's harder to write a small 70-word caption than it is to blab on.
Well, if we have some would-be writers in the crowd, we hope you'll join us in the spring, where we'll be featuring our Kentucky Writers Conference, which is an annual project of university libraries, and we invite writers like Nancy in to and from around the country to in and cultivate people with writing talents. If you're interested in getting a copy of the book, the Glasgow WKU Bookstore has stayed overtime tonight, and she'll be selling copies of the book, and we'll be doing some signing maybe right here, eh? And we invite you to join us after for a reception. On behalf of WKU Libraries and the Kentucky Museum and our friends organization who sponsor these series, we want to thank you for coming out this evening. We want you to take advantage of the opportunity to buy a copy of the book. If you'd like to, she can sign, she'll sign copies. And we'd like you to join in some refreshments. And again, thanks and good evening.